You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Worldwide KFUO and specifically underwriting Faith and Family. You can find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. You've probably heard in the news about physician-assisted suicide. What is the physician's vocation? What is their responsibility? What is their duty? Why do many physicians become physicians? To aid in dying or aid in living? And we're going to talk about that today. Our guest, Dr. Ken Stevens, Physician Aid in Living Coalition. He's a spokesperson for the Physician Aid in Living Coalition. Dr. Stevens, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate being with you.
Tell me about what led you to consider this vocation, this work of physician.
I've been a doctor for 50 years, and I'm still practicing. I think I was brought 14 or 15 years old when I knew doctors. My father was not a physician, but he was a bacteriologist at a university. I enjoyed the sciences, and I just felt that I should go into medicine to help people. And that's really, and it's been a wonderful 50 years.
What have you learned through those 50 years about your vocation, about the patients you've served and cared for?
My specialty is radiation oncology, which is taking care of patients with cancer, from children to the aged. And I've had wonderful experiences. People are very scared. Usually they've been told that they have cancer before they come to me, so they're very scared about what's going to happen to them. Cancer is a serious problem. And they put a lot of trust in me that I'm going to help them and not harm them.
They're when they hear the word cancer, they're afraid of what might happen, whether it be pain or further illness or even death, I would assume.
That's correct.
What do you view as your responsibility as a physician? What is your duty in caring for, treating these patients?
I've learned to ask two questions when I talk to people, or especially new patients. I say, what have you been told about your condition, and what more do you want to know? And that way I'm guided and provide them with the information that they want to know in terms of the treatment and the prognosis, although many times we cannot really predict what's going to happen. And in fact, I was reading an article that said that there's it's sometimes hard to tell patients what's happening because of all the new drugs that can be fatal a short time ago are now patients are living for years because of the many new drugs that are available to them.
The topic of physician-assisted suicide has been in the news more so in the last, I think, 2 years than I've heard it throughout my life. And physician-assisted suicide, euthanasia, it's becoming a topic of news here in the United States and around the world, really, especially with the Brittany Maynard story over a year ago, and then the recent film Me Before You this past year, and the book that led up to that film. Let's begin with, what is the American Medical Association's stance on physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia?
Yeah, the statement of the American Medical Association, I'll just quote here, is that physician-assisted suicide is fundamentally incompatible with a physician's role as healer, would be difficult or impossible to control and would pose serious societal risks. Allowing physicians to participate in assisted suicide would cause more harm than good. And that's a policy that they've had for a long, long time.
How is this central to your work as a physician, to your vocation?
Patients have to trust their doctors that they're going to be there to care for them. Need to sort of define what's these. Assisted suicide is when a doctor writes a prescription for a lethal dose of primarily sleeping pills. And then the patient takes them and take their own life. Euthanasia is where someone else does it for them, either by lethal injection or by putting something in their mouth. And that's just not the role of it. When a doctor writes a prescription for assisted suicide, a prescription is a written order. When a patient goes into the hospital, a doctor writes orders for the patient, you know, directing what's going to happen to the patient. So a written prescription is actually an order, so the doctor is actually ordering the patient to die. It can really affect the trust between the patient and the doctor, and I've got some personal experiences. In 1982, my wife had cancer for a while, and it was progressing, and we'd been married 18 years. We had 6 children, and we went to the doctor in May of 1982, and it was really obvious that no more further treatment could be given. And as we were about to leave his office, he said, well, I could write you a prescription for an extra large amount of pain medication. It was very subtly said. My wife said, no, my pain's under control. And when I helped her to the car, she said, Ken, he wants me to kill myself. And it just devastated her that her supposedly trusted doctor would very subtly suggest that her life was no longer worth living. And so it made me realize that it's really important for patients to be able to trust their doctor. We have, because people know my position, many times I and other doctors in our organization will get calls from patients or their families concerned about a particular doctor that they're going to, wondering if that doctor is a death doctor. Are they really going to be looking out for their welfare, or are they going to be a taker of life for them? So I really learned from that experience, and my wife subsequently died a few days later in our home, just naturally, no pain, just a natural, good death. And again, I still remember all that she went through with that.
Was it difficult having two vocations, one being a physician and also being a husband? Was it difficult trying to figure out, to decide how to care for her? Do you care for her as a husband, as a physician, both? Where, how did you draw the line?
Well, you use other doctors to help you, it is hard. And that's not uncommon for people that are in the healing professions, doctors and nurses and others. It's interesting that we call it a healing profession. We don't call it a profession where you're going to take a person's life. Patients really expect us to be healers and not in the business of taking lives.
Dr. Stevens, what is the difference between physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia?
A physician-assisted suicide is where a doctor writes a prescription for lethal drugs, and it's a lot of drugs. The barbiturates that are used, you have to take 100 capsules all at once, or at least what's within the 100 capsules all at once to cause the death. And it basically puts a person to sleep, and then they die. Although some patients have actually awakened and not died. Euthanasia is where someone else is administering the lethal drug, either by mouth or by lethal injection.
One is really by the individuals. There's assistance in that a physician is prescribing the pharmaceutical. But in the other, it's not only prescribed but administered by someone other than the individual.
Correct. It could be by a lethal injection. I think in Europe, in the Netherlands and Belgium, and even up in Canada now, they have euthanasia, and it's usually by lethal injection.
And in these countries, euthanasia by lethal injection. Is someone recommending or someone for this? I can't even call it treatment for this procedure. Do they have to have some criteria to be met in order to receive that?
The criteria started out very narrow, and the criteria are very broad right now. For instance, we have reports of many people who are euthanized, and they're not aware that they are being euthanized. Thousands, I think as many as 1,000 a year in some of those countries. We have reports of individuals being euthanized because they are, quote, tired of life. They don't have any condition, or they may be depressed. We have children, very young children, who are being euthanized. They wouldn't really be aware of what's happening because they're a child. So, you know,
who's making that choice for those children? Who's deciding that these children are to be euthanized?
I think it's the parents. And in some circumstances, for the elder, there are elderly people with like Alzheimer's and other conditions where the doctors feel that the patients don't have life worth living, and so they're being euthanized. And it's interesting, the phrase "life not worth living" was in German. That's what the Nazis used as their criteria for the Holocaust, that Jews and others didn't have life worth living. It was life unworthy of life was the phrase. They had life unworthy of life.
Are we making decisions that are not ours to make when we decide whose life is worth living, who is worthy of life?
Well, one of the arguments for those that are in favor of assisted suicide and euthanasia is that people want that choice to die. They want to end their life. The problem is that in today's society, and especially in the medical area, we don't always have that choice. There's a story in the news now of a woman, a Stephanie Packer in California. Stephanie Packer is a 33-year-old mother of four in California, and she has a condition, a terminal condition that's affecting her lungs. And the doctor wanted to give her, wanted to prescribe a particular medication for her condition, she's in California, and the insurance company denied approval of that, and they denied it multiple times. And last year, California legislature passed a law legalizing assisted suicide there. And so this Stephanie Packer asked the insurance company, you're not willing to approve or pay for this chemotherapy drug. Would you cover drugs that would end my life? And the response from the insurance company was, yes, that they would provide those drugs, but there would be $1.20 copay. So she went to the media, and that's there's a number of articles online, and also there's an article that was in the New York Post October 24th, that's just about 3 weeks ago, showing her with her children and her husband. But so she says she wants the choice to live, not the choice to die.
What does this say about our culture, our character, when we decide, when agencies decide that death for someone would be better than treatment for, or even managing pain for them during a terminal illness?
Yeah, we had the situation in Oregon in the year 2008 of a woman by the name of Barbara Wagner, who was on Oregon Medicaid, or the Oregon Health Plan, and she had cancer, lung cancer, and had been treated, and then the lung cancer came back, and her doctor wanted to give her a chemotherapy drug called Tarceva. And she received a letter from the insurance company that they would not cover the cost of Tarceva, but the letter said that she was eligible for Comfort Care and reminded her that in Oregon, Comfort Care included assisted suicide. So again, she went to the media, and there's some TV things on YouTube about this story. That, you know, who do these people think they are? They'll pay for me to die, but they won't pay for me to live. And so that was in the news, both the press and also the TV. So that it's cheaper. It's probably cheaper to die of assisted suicide than it is to continue with treatment. And in a in 1994, the New York State Task Force on Life and Law said, no matter how carefully any guidelines are framed, assisted suicide and euthanasia will be practiced through the prism of social inequality and bias that characterize the delivery of services to all segments of society, including healthcare. Growing concerns about healthcare costs increase the risk presented by legalizing assisted suicide and euthanasia. This cost consciousness will not be diminished and may be exacerbated by healthcare reform. That was 22 years ago. And I know that in my medical practice, when seeing a patient and I want to provide care, or I want to do a test, maybe like a MRI scan or a PET scan, I can't just order it and have it done. I have to receive approval from the insurance company before that will be done. So that we are living in a situation where, as I said earlier, people want the choice, but many times it's going to be someone else's choice.
What does this culture of death that we seem to be moving toward, perhaps even spiraling or hurling toward quickly, this culture of death that we've evolved into, what does this mean then for physicians when we as a culture, whether it's in the United States, in Canada, or other countries where physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia are becoming widely accepted and the preferred practice by insurance companies, what does this mean for physicians as regulations, as state regulations, even federal regulations regarding your practice? What does this mean for physicians? Are there big risks now and in the future for those who would be opposed to this?
Yeah, the question of conscience comes under threat. We're supposed to be able to have our conscience. I was quoted in the New York Times a few years ago that I did not go into medicine to kill people. That's just the nature of medicine, that I didn't become a doctor to kill people. And for instance, in Canada, the Supreme Court in Canada, about a year and a half ago, ruled that the Canadians had the right for assisted suicide and euthanasia. And in some of the provinces, the doctors are being forced to do it. That they have the doctors cannot opt out of it. One of the I think ironic situations is in California. Last year, the California legislature passed a law or a bill legalizing assisted suicide in California. The state hospitals in California are the mental hospitals. And there's a regulation that has recently come out to the mental hospitals indicating that patients that are in the mental hospitals are eligible for assisted suicide. Think of what that means. A person is usually committed to a mental hospital because of their competency. A question of competency. They're a danger to themselves. They're a danger to others. Maybe they're a suicide threat. And can you imagine the irony of being committed to a mental hospital? And sometimes you're committed to the hospital because of a crime that you've done, that you are determined to not be mentally competent. But the regulation basically says that if a patient is in a state hospital, mental hospital, is eligible, that either the state hospital finds an, quote, off-site, meaning someone outside of the facility, to write the prescription, or that they have to do it within the mental hospital. So you can imagine you have a mental illness, you're committed to a mental hospital, and then find out that you're eligible for assisted suicide, and so the psychiatrists are writing the prescriptions, would be writing the prescriptions for the assisted suicide. I mean, how crazy? In fact, I was thinking, what's more crazy, the people that are being committed or the people writing these regulations?
You mentioned earlier that you were quoted as saying you did not become a physician to kill people. Why have we moved? I remember in the past we would hear the phrase in public circles and in the media of mercy killing. We no longer use that phrase. Now we hear aid in dying and death with dignity. Why the change in the terminology we use?
Well, man by the name of Derek Humphrey moved from England to Canada or England to Oregon. Maybe 25 years ago, and started an organization called Hemlock Society. He actually wrote a book called Lawful Exit, and in the Lawful Exit, it was basically a book of how you pass laws that would legalize assisted suicide and euthanasia. He actually had a chapter on called Doublespeak, so the chapter was called Doublespeak, that you change the language, making it more palatable, and you obscure things. You use euphemisms, and so rather than calling it assisted suicide and euthanasia, you use terms like death with dignity or aid in dying. It is not, in medicine, we really try to be transparent. We try to use proper language, but this is driven by an organization. It used to be called the Hemlock Society. Now it's called the Compassionate Choices. They raise millions of dollars. Their purpose is to get assisted suicide and euthanasia legalized throughout the world. And they use, I've learned that language is the bullets or the ammunition used to, in this war. It's an ethical war in medicine. So we prefer to use the term, the proper terms of assisted suicide and euthanasia. Those are terms that have always been used. But the opposite side, those that favor legalization use the term, want to obscure the language and use terms like death with dignity or aid in dying. If I aid a person in dying, really what does that mean? It should mean that I'm helping them go through the dying process very peacefully and without pain, not that I'm going to kill them.
We're discussing physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia with Dr. Ken Stevens, Physician Aid in Living Coalition spokesperson. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Faith and Family right after this.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
One danger of chemical abortion pills is they send the girl home to abort by herself. Since profuse bleeding is expected, young girls and women don't know when they've crossed the line and bleed to death. This happened with a 15-year-old girl who had an abortion without telling her parents. By the time she went to her mom for help, it was too late. They rushed her to the hospital, but she was dead on arrival. She had bled to death. This abortion happened in Kenya, but it can easily happen here. Planned Parenthood puts up a wall of secrecy around young girls and then gives them dangerous abortion pills. The FDA even recently loosened the safety guidelines, meaning more young girls and women will be in danger and may die with their babies. Please join me in praying for those women who are contemplating abortion.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Have you considered making gifts to KFUO using Securities? While considering your year-end contributions to KFUO, think about other ways of giving that may offer significant tax benefits, especially with higher appreciated securities. If you have questions about using securities for gifts or other possible assets, call Mary at 314-996-1518. We'll send a representative out to help answer your questions about using non-cash assets for gifts to your favorite radio station, Worldwide KFUO.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Ad Crucem offers theologically sound, scripturally rich, and high-quality items for nearly every occasion. They have exquisite greeting cards, handcrafted jewelry, fine art, crucifixes, church certificates, banners, and much more. AdCrucem.com has amazing products at great prices. That's AdCrucem.com. Greeting cards and gifts designed and made in the USA. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
Peace Lutheran Church of South County, KFUO's Church of the Week, invites you to worship on Saturdays, 5 p.m., and Sundays, 8, 9:20, and 10:30 a.m. Sunday school and Bible classes meet at 9:15 a.m. Peace is located just west of the JB Bridge on I-255 near Telegraph Road in St. Louis. For Senior Pastor Dennis Castens and Associate Pastor John Ferguson and all the members, you're invited to worship at Peace this Saturday or Sunday, or accessing them online at peacelutheranstl.org.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We're talking with Dr. Ken Stevens of Physician Aid in Living Coalition. Dr. Stevens, before we went to break, we were talking about how our change in vocabulary changes how we approach this topic of physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia by moving from words like mercy killing and even suicide and euthanasia to things like aid in dying and death with dignity, and how those changes in terminology are making it more culturally acceptable, socially acceptable, more palatable in our own vocabulary and in our homes, in our schools, throughout all of our culture. What is the Physician Aid in Living Coalition doing to in response to this move toward wide acceptance of physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia?
Yeah, we formed because of what the AMA has is considering doing. As I indicated earlier, the AMA, American Medical Association, has always been opposed to the legalization of assisted suicide and euthanasia. And in their annual meeting in this past June, they passed a resolution to study assisted suicide and euthanasia. And we're concerned that that study, quote study, would lead to them taking a position of neutrality, which basically would mean that rather than being opposed, it'd be neutral, which means that it would be okay in certain circumstances. So a number of organizations have come together forming this Physician Aid in Living Coalition, and it includes representatives of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, the American College of Pediatricians, Catholic Medical Association, the organization that I'm president of, which is Physicians for Compassionate Care Education Foundation. And we want people to recognize that, we want the AMA leadership to recognize that we need to maintain, support, as a coalition, we support the current position of the AMA in opposing assisted suicide and euthanasia, but we would oppose them going to a, quote, neutral position. And the article that you received from the Orlando Sentinel was an article by Dr. White from Louisiana indicating that basically taking a neutral position is really doesn't make sense.
Who makes up Physician Aid and Living Coalition?
As I mentioned, that these are organizations like the American College of Pediatricians, the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, the Catholic Medical Association, Physicians for Compassionate Care Education Foundation, and others.
And how long has the coalition been in existence?
Yeah, just a few months. Mm-hmm. It was really formed in response to the AMA's considering going neutral on assisted suicide.
What prompted your involvement in this, in the Physician Aid and Living Coalition?
Well, again, I live in Oregon, and Oregon is where assisted suicide started in the United States. Back in 1994, there were some court cases that didn't actually start in Oregon until 1998. And so when I work at the medical school, the Oregon Health and Science University Medical School in Portland, Oregon. And in 1994, after it passed, they called a meeting and said, well, we're going to be doing here at the medical school. And I thought to myself, no, I'm not. And so I and other like-minded doctors got together, and we actually realized that we needed to organized, and we called ourselves Physicians for Compassionate Care Education Foundation. I have a website, pccef.org, and we had educational conferences teaching doctors and nurses and others how to really take care of people, palliative care, pain care, and also to investigate and oppose the spread of suicide and euthanasia, and we continue to do that.
If the AMA moves to a, quote, neutral position on these issues, what does that mean for physicians like you and others who this is a serious matter of conscience?
Very, very serious. It means that we've lost, you know, I guess in the military they say, you know, we've got your back. Well, the AMA is not going to have your back if you're opposed to assisted suicide, and it's dangerous for physicians, and it's dangerous for patients and for the public. I think people need to realize that the arguments by those who are in favor of assisted suicide describe patients who are in pain, who are dying. That's really not the reality of things. We can control pain. What it turns out is that the people that are asking for assisted suicide don't want to be disabled. They consider that there are things worse than death, which would be, you know, being in a wheelchair or other evidence of disability. And there are actually organizations of the people who have disabilities. It's to an organization called Not Dead Yet. You know, that you know, we're not, you know, you're saying that there's conditions worse than death, and we're not dead yet. And there's an organization called the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund. And we find that the people who have disabilities are many times probably the strongest opponents of the legalization of assisted suicide. And to give you an example, that you know, people are not necessarily dying. In the year 2000, I had a woman who was referred to me with cancer. The cancer was in the low rectal area, and it was not operable. They couldn't, the surgeon said he couldn't operate on it. So she was referred to me for radiation and chemotherapy. And so when I saw her, I said, you know, this is a condition that's, you know, can be treated, and we, you know, you have a pretty good chance. And she said, Dr. Stevens, you don't understand. I'm not here for the treatment. I don't want treatment. Give me the pills. I voted for the assisted suicide law. I want the pills. And I said, you know, this can be treated. And I said, would you come back and see me next week? And in the meantime, she went back to the surgeon, and the surgeon told her that without treatment, she'd be dead within 6 months to a year. So she qualified for the law. I could have written the prescription, and I would be justified. But I kept meeting with her, and I learned more about her and learned that she had a son who was in the police academy. And I said, wouldn't you like to see him graduate? Wouldn't you like to see him get married? And she realized that she had something to live for. And she accepted treatment, and the tumor just melted away. And she's alive 16 years later. She has told me that if I, as her doctor, had believed in assisted suicide, she believes she would have died, and she would not be here 16 years later.
What
Those
was
the danger that, does, mm-hmm. that indicates the danger of this? That many times it's people are throwing their lives away.
What was the response? Did you hear from the response of her son?
Say that again.
Did you hear the response of her son? You mentioned that she was grateful.
Oh, he's grateful. He's very grateful.
Just to help us understand, what is the relationship between physicians and the AMA, the American Medical Association? What is that? What purpose does the AMA serve to physicians and to society in general?
Well, the AMA is probably the largest organization representing physicians in the United States, but there are other organizations. We have specialty organizations. I have a radiation oncology specialty. We have state organizations. There are also other specialty organizations. But the AMA is probably the largest, although my understanding is that they represent less than 20% of all of the MDs in the United States. So it's maybe 20% of all doctors in the United States belong to the AMA, but they are probably the largest organization. They had I attended the they have an annual meeting in June, and they have a semi-annual or an interim meeting that was just held last weekend, and I attended that down in Orlando, Florida. And I met with our other members, leaders of these organizations that are in the Physician Aid in Dying Coalition. They had a panel discussion about aid in dying.
What were the outcomes of that?
It was what they called an educational session. We don't know. The American Medical Association chose to have, they have a council within the AMA called the Council on Ethics and Judicial Affairs, CEJA. And that, I think there are maybe 15 members of that council, and that they're receiving information and testimony. And I had sent to your producer a document that indicated how to contact these people. I don't know if you have that.
I don't have it in front of me at the moment.
Okay. But people can contact the president of the American Medical Association, Then there's also a secretary of this Council on Ethics and Judicial Affairs, and they can respond indicate. We would hope that they would indicate that they are opposed to the AMA changing its position. The AMA's current position is in opposition of assisted suicide and euthanasia, and we do not want them to go neutral. It would be terribly dangerous to patients. you go to your doctor, and, does your doctor really have is the doctor looking out for the patient, or is the doctor looking out for the insurance company or for the government and trying to save the insurance company or the government money?
Right. Is this debate about physician-assisted suicide, is it about autonomy, or is it about something else? Because it seems that, the idea behind this is my body, this is my choice, which we hear argued time and again for a number of things. Is that what this is really about?
I think that's sort of the initial call. But I think the underlying message has to do with economics, that it's cheaper, that you're using resources, and it affects people that are not necessarily dying. For instance, I have a friend whose mother had breast cancer, but she didn't have active breast cancer at the time, but her mother was having trouble breathing, having trouble swallowing. And so this daughter took her mother to the hospital here in Portland, and they evaluated the mother, and the doctor came back and said to the daughter, "Your mother has pneumonia. Do you want her to be treated?" And the daughter said, "My mother's competent. Mother, you have pneumonia. Do you want antibiotics?" And the mother said, "Of course I do. Why wouldn't I?" So you see what the doctor was suggesting, that, your mother's in her 80s. She's lived a long life. Pneumonia's a nice way to die. But that's not what the daughter, that's not what the mother really wanted. As I mentioned, this thing in the American, with California now having assisted suicide legalized, that they now plan to have assisted suicide in the California state psychiatric hospitals. That's crazy. At least for me, it's crazy.
What are the next steps that we should be taking? I'm pleased to hear that there are physicians who truly care about this issue, and that the Physician Aid in Living Coalition is working to maintain that AMA statement on physician suicide and euthanasia, to continue to be persistent that the vocation of a physician is about healing and living, not about killing. What can we, as the general population, as the listener, those who this is a significant matter of conscience for us as well? What can we do?
That your listeners need to. Many of them are. They're probably all a patient of somebody.
True.
Have their own health problems, so I think they need to be educated and educate others. Some of your audience are going to be physicians or nurses or other health care related professionals. They need to be educated about this and be aware of the dangers and the harms of this. It's very easy for the proponents to say, "Well, this is about choice," but it's really not about choice. It's about it's your life, and what you're going to find is that you don't. In fact, there's a website called Choice Illusion, choiceillusion.org, and it's a website that is basically saying that when the people talk about choice, it's really an illusion, that you really don't have your choice. It's someone else that's making that choice. It might be the government, it might be insurance companies, it might be your family. Maybe you have a lot of money and your heirs would like you to leave as much to them as possible, and so they may encourage you to end your life early and save your money for them.
What is the what is the future work of what is the Physician Aid and Living Coalition plan to do from here forward?
Well, we have sent our statements to the American Medical Association, to the president of the American Medical Association, and to the council that is, quote, studying this issue, and speaking with other organizations. And I very much appreciate being on your radio station to help educate people about this. And it's important for the American Medical Association to hear from doctors and from patients and from the public that support the current AMA position that is opposed to the legalization of assisted suicide and euthanasia.
Where can we find out more about the work of the Physician Aid and Living Coalition?
That's a good question. We're so new, I'm not sure that we even have a website. I mentioned the website choiceillusion.org. That's one good place to go to. There's a elder rights attorney that has that website. Our organization, Physicians for Compassionate Care Education Foundation, and you can find that with P, it's basically just the initials, pccef.org. And it's not the easiest website to get through, but we have quite a bit of information on that, and we've had that website for probably about 20 years or so.
Where is the United States in comparison to other countries? You know, we mentioned a few other countries that already have euthanasia as opposed to, or in addition to physician-assisted suicide. Where are we as the United States? Are we following suit with many of these other countries that have already progressed to euthanasia?
Yeah, the proponent, the assisted suicide proponent organization, is trying to get as many states and maybe even the whole nation to have legalized assisted suicide. They want to do that before they push on to euthanasia. Assisted suicide is now legal in Oregon, Washington, California, Vermont. It just became legal in Colorado with this last week's election. And there, Washington, D.C. City Council has voted in favor of legalizing assisted suicide in our nation's capital in Washington, D.C. It's sort of a ongoing pressure from, and the proponent organization for assisted suicide has a lot of money, millions of dollars, and are organized to state by state. I consider it like a cancer. I consider assisted suicide and euthanasia to sort of be like a cancer. It starts in one area and it spreads to the rest of the body. We're trying to stop that. I have likened myself to the immune system of the body, to what I call an activated T cell. Activated T cells help fight off infections and also cancer, and I've described myself as being an activated T cell. But you have to be exposed. Well, you can be exposed to it or you can be immunized, and we're trying to immunize states and try to give the proper arguments that again, the other side uses the word choice, and we say, you know, you really don't have your choice. And the other side says, well, these are people who are already dying. No, you're not already dying. As I mentioned, the patient that I treated 16 years ago, she was eligible because a doctor had told her that she might be dead within 6 months, but that didn't mean that she was dying. And she's alive 16 years later.
You mentioned that the AMA, American Medical Association, recently met just in this past month for their interim meeting. And one of the topics is the AMA taking a neutral position regarding assisted suicide, physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia. What is, from here forward, how did you leave that meeting? Is it going to be a tough task before you and the Physician Aid in Living Coalition, or is this something that you left feeling hopeful, more hopeful about?
I think I was hopeful primarily because I think my hopefulness came from meeting with many other members of the coalition, the Physician Aid in Living Coalition, and receiving support from them in the work that we're doing. I don't know where we stand with the leadership of the AMA. That's kind of scary. We don't know really what their position is, or the Council on Ethics and Judicial Affairs, called the CEJA. It's scary. It's very scary. But I'm hopeful that we can have the AMA maintain their current position of opposition to assisted suicide and euthanasia.
Our guest today, Dr. Ken Stevens, Physician Aid in Living Coalition spokesperson. Dr. Stevens, thank you for your work in taking a stand on these life issues and for being our guest today on Faith and Family. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Andy, I appreciate it. Andy, I can be glad to speak at other times as well.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.